You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Now, there are thousands upon thousands upon thousands of Interstate Battery retail stores all over the United States. So whether you need a new truck battery, which, by the way, I've heard that they are some of the best in the automotive industry, right? A truck battery, a car battery. If you need batteries for something as simple as a remote control or a unique battery for a range finder or one of your children's toys, Interstate Batteries not only has those batteries available, if they don't have them, they can order them for you. Or if you need to find out more about a specific battery or the specs of a specific battery, stop into their retail store and talk with a battery specialist. These guys are very knowledgeable about what products they offer and what it is that you need for whatever battery you're looking for. So stop in to a local retail store or visit interstatebatteries.com to learn more about their company, the batteries that they offer, and a whole bunch of other stuff. So check out interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Welcome to the Land and Legacy Podcast. We're your hosts, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye.
This is your number one resource for all things land.
If you're interested in conservation, habitat management, hunting strategy, and rural real estate, this is the podcast for you.
Before we get this podcast started, we have an announcement to make for you guys. We have a giveaway from now, August 25th, when this podcast drops, to September 14th, 2020. And to enter for your chance at prizes coming after we say how to enter, go to our YouTube channel, Land and Legacy, and subscribe. If you have subscribed, go ahead and comment and like some of our current videos, and you will be entered in.
And those to drop between this 25th and the 14th time frame.
Yes.
That's how you enter. We've had a fantastic response of people listening to the podcast, interacting on social media, but I don't think that people are yet prepared what's going to be coming.
We're dragging you over to YouTube now to watch the videos.
Because there's going to be a lot of cool stuff happening this fall, but when you do that, when you are entering yourself in to win, you're setting yourself up for Vortex prize package, which includes some binos, and then, of course, some Land and Legacy apparel is always going to be thrown into the mix, too. So we've got some other gift items that might be thrown in this time frame. We're kind of waiting to hear back. But there's some pretty cool prizes that are potentials for you guys to win if you're chosen.
So please go subscribe. Tell your buddy to subscribe. We got a lot of hunts coming this fall. A lot of really nice deer. We're going to be running. We got a lot of cameras, so we're going to be running trying to make it all happen. So please go subscribe to our YouTube channel and enjoy one of this week's podcast with Mr. Kyle Hedges. All right, guys. Welcome back. Land of Legs podcast. We're going to jump into something that's really getting full swing, and we're not even talking about deer.
No.
We're talking about something that especially those guys in the South and Southeast and then parts of the Midwest really get into, and that's dove hunting.
Absolutely. It's just around the corner. I mean, we're days away from many of the opening, and I think that it's funny because a lot of times you're like, oh, there's doves everywhere, but a lot of times people just don't even recognize the intricacies of the bird, the migratory patterns, and the fact that they migrate a ton, a lot. And there's a lot of things that you can do, whether it's field prep to increase your chances at hunting them and your opportunity. So we've got the man, the myth, the legend on.
I thought you always said that with Frank.
Well, they're both, you know, pretty good.
Okay.
Don't tell Frank.
Kyle Hedges is back.
Yeah.
And I'm just better looking than Frank.
You hide it. We don't know that. You hide your face under that mustache.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, man. So we got Kyle back on. For you guys, if you're not aware, Kyle's one of our consultants with a long background in upland birds. managing thousands of acres. A big part of that is managing for dove hunting and dove management. And if you want to go back to a podcast we did about the same time last year, it's focused on food plotting for doves, and we'll touch on that a little bit. But this is a different kind of approach.
It's a good compare contrast.
And should be important if you're really trying to maximize your property, because a lot of the stuff he's going to talk about will try to tie in with the benefits of that to other wildlife.
Sure.
And so, Kyle, do you want to introduce what is going on in the world of doves right now?
Yeah, I mean, so on the public land, and as we talked last year, you know, where we plant, we do some really intense management, you know, fairly expensive. You get into, you know, $100+ an acre intensive management, but, and we're doing that right now on the public land and building some really nice dove numbers. And opening day, we'll have, you know, a few thousand doves coming into 50-100 acre area, and we'll have a few hundred people too. I mean, it's crowded, and
yeah.
But it's great. I mean, there's really good harvest, and that's what we talked about last year on the podcast. But I wanted to touch on, you know, there's quite a few alternatives to that. You know, some people don't want to invest that time and money, and I get it, especially when they might be in a deer stand, you know, by September 15th. So, and their dove season isn't going to be, they're not looking to hunt doves off and on for 2 months or something like a serious wing shooter might, but there's a lot of opportunities beyond those hardcore managed fields. Some natives that, like you mentioned, and at the onset of this, we can go into some of that here in a minute and some other ideas as well, where you can find some doves, and then some enhancements to some of these types of things I think we need to touch on.
For sure. I think it all goes hand in hand. Just like in the whitetail world, for a lot of our viewers or our listeners and viewers, and we'll talk more on viewers and the YouTube channel, because there was a reminder.
That's right.
There's a giveaway coming.
That's right.
But if we're managing for whitetails, we have our food plots, but then it's so important to manage outside of those food plot acres, and that's what you're going to steer us to here during this podcast.
I think too, Kyle, you hit a really good point of just in the introduction aspect of there's so many dove hunters out there who are the opening day guys. And then they put the shotgun away, and their mind shifts, and they start getting into deer hunting. And so this podcast would be great for them to say, hey, how can I still have a successful, you know, opening day, opening weekend, scratch out, you know, a limit of doves for those 2 days, and then set it up with not that much investment in? Because that's the reality of many dove hunters across the country.
Yep, that's right. And we can just, you know, step right into it here. One of the things that brought this to my thoughts, I guess, here recently is the fact that here in the Midwest we're kind of in a drought, not a full-blown drought, I guess, according to meteorologists, but it's pretty dang dry, as you guys can attest to. So anyway, that makes for some low ponds years like this when you get some dry weather, and this happens a lot in August anyway, just a normal summer, where pasture ponds will have some bare ground, especially if they've been grazed. They've got a little bit of mud flat or some bare dirt between the vegetation, you know, up on the bank and the water's edge, because the water's drawn down a foot or two over the dry summer. Well, those are perfect places to shoot some doves. After they feed, especially evenings, those are typically the best evening shoots. And I've killed limits over these situations. I've had times where, you know, it's a nice relaxing hunt and you're not going to kill limits. But if it's a little pond, you know, you may have 40 doves come there and all 40 are in gun range.
Sure.
So you can have some really nice opportunity on a pretty small little pasture pond sometimes. So typically they'll go feed, and then right after they feed, they'll come get a drink before they go back to the roost. So you'll get this crazy flurry sometimes. There'll be some birds trickling in and out, you know. hour, hour and a half before dark, and then this last 30 minutes, it's just this flurry of doves coming in to get that drink before they head back to roost. So there's some opportunities to look there. You know, folks can cruise around, whether it's on your own place, checking some ponds, or even, you know, looking at down the road, just at some open pasture ponds. So maybe you're not even really banging around and dove hunting where you might be sitting, you know, a few hundred yards away in a deer stand 2 weeks from now. So maybe you won't even feel like you're, if you're worried about, you know, disturbing where you might be deer hunting.
You said one thing. Sorry, I don't want to interrupt, Kyle, but you said one thing about the aspect of bear dirt. And I think that in the world of food plotting and everything, and the going drawing to soil health, everyone's so worried about bear dirt and covering, armoring the soil and everything. But real quick, break down for everyone listening why bear dirt for doves and other upland game birds is important. Why is that feature necessary, and why should they be looking for that when hunting doves?
Yeah, so specifically for doves, it's a little different reason. They have real weak, dainty legs. They don't scratch around like a pheasant or a turkey or a quail for food. They don't dig through the duff to find seeds. So they're sight feeding. They need seeds just laying on the bare ground. You know, for quail, we want that bare ground just so the chicks aren't getting wet with dew and they can move around for mobility. But for doves, it's more for sight feeding. Now, at the edge of a pond, it's absolutely for mobility. They don't want to wade through grass. They're just not going to do that. That's not how doves work around. They don't run around on the ground like a quail or a pheasant either, you know. Mm-hmm. They fly in light. They want to get a drink. They're not going to land in shin-deep vegetation. This is not what they do. So that's why that low water is perfect. And then lots of times there may be some weeds around the pond, especially a grazed pond is even better. The cattle will beat up the edge a little bit. Sometimes there'll be some ragweed. So there may be a little bit of food there and an opportunity to get a drink after they feed.
Perfect.
You know, there's some real enhancements, too, that people don't think about. Some real simple things. Let's say you got a pond that's maybe got a few trees around it. We want fairly open ponds. You're not typically going to be dove hunting a pond, you know, that's in the timber or something, but an open pasture pond, if it's too big of a pond maybe to cover, and you're like, man, I can't get them zeroed in, you know, half of them are landing on the other side. And if you get put a buddy over there, but if you don't have that, you're hunting solo. Man, I've gone to ponds that have two or three trees around them, and basil treat one of them. Mm-hmm. So doves love to land in dead trees, and we've talked about this before. You know, people use all kinds of crazy, put up old telephone poles or whatever, and make some artificial perches out west. So basil treat a tree at the edge of a pond, and the next year you've got dead limbs. And every dove that comes to that pond wants to first either fly down to get a drink and then fly up to the loaf for a minute, or vice versa. So you've just narrowed it down to exactly where you want to sit. And if you've got the luxury of some low limbs, you can hang some decoys up there and things like that. Brush pile at the edge of a pond, anything that's got dead sticks that they can loaf on can really zero your search area, you know, and they can just suck right into you. So
when I think of a dove, like in the legs, I picture like a kindergartner drawing a bird, and it's a yeah. big old circle, and then
with
they
like
draw little
sticks.
Bitty sticks yeah. out the bottom. That's a dove. Like they yep. don't match up. You know,
yep,
you know why
those wimpy pink legs.
yeah.
You know why I figured it out, Kyle. I think that you go in and basil the trees, so when you take Frank in to hunt, the birds actually perch on the limb so he can shoot a bird that's sitting and actually keep up with you when you're shooting him on the wing. Is that right?
There you go. That's right. Yeah. You got to throw him a softball once in a while.
But that, I mean, it's so true. When you see doves, you see them landing, lighting on open limbs. It's not in dense canopies. It's on the dead branches. It's in areas where they can get in and out of, fly very easily. They're agile birds, but, man, you make it so easy for them, they're not going to light anywhere else.
Yeah, and, you know, that's a simple thing. I don't know how many people I've talked to that have never thought of that. You know, I've talked about, yeah, I hunt this pond, but, oh, it's a half acre in size, you know, and I'll get some shots, but a lot of them land on the – well, you kill the one tree right there. You don't need them unless you just want to sit under it to have lunch while you're catfishing. Kill one of those trees, and you can get almost every dove to come right there. Or, you know, break out a mojo dove. There's other alternatives. If you don't want to kill a tree around a pond, break out a mojo, motion wing decoy, and put it at the edge of the pond. So there's some opportunities there to really change the game. And it's simple, cheap.
Oh, it's so simple.
And you can really have a fun shoot.
That is if they have a tree that's not very valuable growing at the edge of the pond. I mean, I don't know if you know this, but most trees out there are valuable, it seems like, right?
Yeah, I'm saying that very sarcastically because
we have so many trees in this country that I'm sure we could find one that's bringing no value to the place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
I've killed a lot of them.
You're describing, you're describing my teenage years dove hunting.
Yep.
We didn't hunt the managed areas that you manage now, where it's sunflowers or burned wheat fields and things like that. We hunted overgrazed pastures that had lots and lots of ragweed growing, and then we hunted between two ponds that also had a telephone wire that ran north to south and basically started just by the one pond and then ran right by the other one. So on certain years when we had a good ragweed crop, we would sit by those ponds in the afternoon, sneezing and shooting doves.
Yep, perfect. And you just open the door to the next subject, and that is that overgraze, the ragweedy field. And it doesn't even have to be overgrazed. It could be for whatever reason, you know, somebody, maybe an idle crop field somewhere that's ragweedy or some other species comes up. But man, there's a great opportunity there. You know, they feed on a lot of different seeds. Obviously, they're not just living on wheat and sunflowers. They're living on a lot of native stuff.
Yeah.
And dry years like this, we get a lot of ragweed showing up in pastures because most pastures are kind of overgrazed. We've had a dry summer, hot, dry summer. So they'll come and feed in those fields. And if sometimes you can get it where it's, you know, predictable, they're flying in just to feed on ragweed, for example, and that's great. You can sit there and pass shoot them. But man, I tell you, one thing I really enjoy is when I get pastures like that and the ragweed is dense enough that I can walk the doves up, actually flush them, and just move around instead of sitting and pass shooting. They're a lot easier to hit, for one. But that's really enjoyable too. You know, you can get out there and you feel like you're, I guess, a precursor for quail or pheasant hunting, and you're on the move and you're flushing doves up out of the ragweed. I've had some really fun hunts doing that. So
I think that's
a good native opportunity.
Yeah, a good point, because so many people just sit on the edge of the timber in the shade and just wait and wait and wait and wait. Well, there's other ways to go about this. Now, if you got big numbers of people in your surrounding fields, yeah, it's not safe to do that. But if you're by yourself or in a controlled group, I mean, get the birds up, get them moving, because they're feeding. And that's a great point. Most people, I don't think, look at that as a technique to be able to kill and fill a bag limit.
That's right. Most people don't ever even consider walking up doves. You know, it's only pass shooting. And yeah, just depends on your situation. Obviously, we got to do everything safe. It depends on who you got with you. But typically, if I'm doing the walking up doves, it's just me or me and one other person, you know, so pretty controlled environment.
So when you're talking about overgrazed pasture, that also kind of spurred up a thought for me for guys that don't have cattle, and that fits right in with old field management for those whitetail guys that are trying to increase the native vegetation, decrease the amount of thick grass thatch. And so if you have an area of your farm that you're just like, I'm just trying to make an old field for the deer. I don't really hunt here. I'm just trying to increase summer forage and fawning cover, or good cover for the fawns and good vegetation forage for the doe that's lactating. I'm going to increase these acres of old field management. And that goes right in with, if you create some kind of rotation in and around these ponds or power lines or dead trees, you can increase the amount of vegetation or these early successional plants like common ragweed, I guess like giant ragweed, depending on the situation, or western ragweed if you're out a little further west in here. And that just is basically some rotational dormant season disking, trying to stimulate those and increase the germination of those forbs, and then decreasing the amount of grassy thatch with prescribed fire. And if you do that on a rotation, that kind of fits in exactly the way we want to manage our old fields anyway.
Yep, that's right. Exactly, and those doves will land in those types of environments if there's enough openness, you know, bare ground.
Yeah.
The veggies, in fact, you can find them in there midday when it's pretty hot because there'll be a canopy. We've talked about this umpteen times with ragweed and plants like that, that a bird can get underneath it and be shaded but still be standing on bare ground. So it provides an opportunity for them to be able to pick around and get some seeds. Lots of times September 1st, you know, it's 98 degrees. So they can stay shaded, but they can still be able to move around and pick seeds. So, I think there's a great opportunity with old field management. You mentioned the disking. You know, if you really wanted to cheat towards doves, you go out and you do some disking mid to late August. And if you make some strips through some of these old fields, and you could really enhance that. That'll expose some seeds, have a little more feeding activity, and open it up a little bit.
If you're doing your, let's just say, fire lines, too, around some of these fields in the fall, in August, you could put your disc in fire line. Then a lot of guys like to plant wheat. So if you're drilling in your wheat.
Or broadcasting.
Or broadcasting and dragging on that, that fits into legal methods, correct?
That is correct. Yep. Just time it right. And it's completely legal. If it's that is a standard farming practice to broadcast wheat. So you bet.
Yep.
There's a lot of ways to make this thing work if you're a whitetail hunter, again, trying to scratch out a few birds. And the other thing I think of that goes hand in hand with all this is just some fallow spring, like, food plots that you didn't get to in the springtime. You just said, I was too busy, conditions weren't right, I didn't get it in that weekend, so I'm going to let that thing go fallow. We've got ragweed, we've got old field asters, we've got mare's tail, all these different things coming up that will provide benefit for deer, wildlife, turkey poults, throughout the summer, great bugging opportunities. And then, you know, you can go in and lightly disc those, or just kind of prep them for your fall planting, and there you go. You can scratch out some doves on those. There's a lot of ways to make this thing work without devoting that, you said, $100 an acre, you know, spraying fields multiple times for your sunflowers and adding the power line to supplement, put decoys and stuff on. Like, you know, you think of a food plot that you've edge feathered, there's probably some dead trees or should be some dead trees around there. Hey, now we've got that same situation right there with whitetail management.
Yep. And I'll give you a couple examples of, you mentioned the fallow fields, and I've actually lived this and had it happen and worked out great. So whether you went in and disc those up, let's say here is an example that I had a few years ago, field that was pretty wet. So it stayed foul, didn't get planted, supposed to be a food plot. And it came up to barnyard grass, which is just wild millet, great duck food. And I mean, it was loaded and just solid barnyard grass. Scalp that plot off, just mowed it, you know, right down to the ground. You could disc it anyway, but let it mature. Seeds had made. Another thing, person could have the neighbor hay it if they wanted or whatever, you know, hey, let's get some value out of this because it was going to be planted for the fall. Mm-hmm. And we shot limits out of that field for several days in a row. It was great. Mm. Another time that happened was a crabgrass foxtail field. I hunted that just last year, actually. And the guy just went in and hayed it. He was going to plant it. Same deal, just something happened and didn't get planted. Hey, I'll just plant it this fall. And so he just hayed the crabgrass and foxtail off of it a week before season. And so it was cut down to, you know, a half inch tall. And all those seeds shattered out on the ground. And we whacked them. I mean, there was 10 of us hunting that field. And everybody was shooting birds, so... Mm. Some really cheap alternatives. I mean, that's not costing you anything. Just taking advantage of what Mother Nature is providing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So let me ask you this. What are your, like, five favorite native species that you would like to see? If you're trying to, you know, and I don't know how many clients we run into in a year mm-hmm. that say, you know, where would be a good place to have a dove hunt or
yeah.
a dove field?
Oh, yeah. Very often.
It kind of is, well, yeah, here's where they're going to do that. But, like, is there anything else I can really do to promote doves or promote dove hunting here? And it's like, well, there's a lot of things. But if that was your goal, you were, hey, I'm going to plant this 2 acres of sunflowers. And then everything else I'm just trying to encourage for doves. So if I'm doing that, what are the, five main species that I would try to promote on my farm?
Food species, native food species that I would want around here are going to be ragweed, top of the list. I want that foxtail, so first two are easy. You almost can't not have them if you're doing any mm-hmm. kind of disturbance. Foxtail can get too thick on you at ground level, but it'll produce a ton of seed. So if you manage it right, it can be good for doves. From personal experience, this one's not going to happen for most people more out west, but wild marijuana is fantastic dove food.
That's
we just don't see
crazy.
That a lot around here.
Ditch weed. Don't they yeah. call that ditch yep. weed?
Yeah. Ditch weed, yep.
Yeah, Kansas is loaded, Nebraska.
Yep, yep. Have yeah. some great hunts over that kind of stuff. After that, what would
Croton?
I say?
Would Croton yeah. rank very high for you?
Yeah, that would be okay. Yeah. Yep, that would work. I've never hunted over it, but I can see where that would,
well,
yep, they would
I
utilize
I just remember
that.
In that same scenario when I told you we used hunt over Gary's pasture, it was a lot of common ragweed and Croton. That was pretty much
yep.
dominating that area.
Yep. I tell you another, and this is not a native one, but a cheaper version if a person wanted to throw something out there and not do the, you know, $100-some an acre sunflower effort is Korean Lesbadiza. And if you mow that at the right time, or better yet, you have the neighbor hay it, that can be fantastic this time of year.
And did
as well.
You list barnyard grass on this one?
I mentioned hunting it. Of course, that takes a wetter situation, but
yeah.
barnyard grass produces a ton of seed. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know, if you were in a wetter, that would be a great opportunity for somebody that's kind of got a wet field and half the time they can't food plot it and it's always a pain in the rear. Well, if you disturb it at the right time and it's wet a lot of times, you get barnyard grass in it. Well, utilize it to your advantage, you know, and
yeah.
make it be a native dove field.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yep. I think
Very
there's
cool.
some neat opportunities out there.
Yeah.
This is going to drop. I'm going to jump to something real quick before I forget about it, but this is going to drop a week before dove season around most of the country.
Yeah. This drops
I
the 25th
so.
Of August. Two
yeah,
days.
Yeah.
yeah.
So about a week out. Well, you know, we talked about the intense public hunting deal, and now we're talking about kind of lower key, little more relaxed style hunting. And I mentioned the Mojo deal on, and you can use that on bigger fields or ponds or whatever, but, and that's been a pet peeve of mine the last few years. This, if you go to public land, anybody listening to this, if you're going to public land opening day and you're going to hunt around a field with 100 other people, and there's 3,000 doves coming in there, you don't need a mojo. Don't bring the mojo. It makes the birds drop real low on the deck, and all of a sudden people are shooting right across the field at somebody else's forehead, and it causes some angst amongst other hunters.
So, certainly, certainly.
You know, save those mojo decoys for later in the season on public land when there's not anyone around, or save them for your private hunts.
Yeah, I think it comes certainly to the safety aspect, and I think that, you know, most fields when managed appropriately or right there on public land, like when season comes in, those fields are prepped and they're ready and they have the doves already. And when you've got that many people around them, it keeps birds up, it keeps them moving, so you're going to have a good shoot regardless. And then from the safety aspect, it makes sense. Just keep them home.
Yeah. Don't need the extra bells and whistles for those kind of hunts. But they are, I do like the, and not just Mojo brand, whatever brand you want to use. Those motion wing decoys are great. And I've used them in situations where, you know, they're just, we couldn't cover enough ground. The field's too big. Or guys out west, you know, just wheat stubble this time of year, you can have some great hunts. Or find a pond that's in the corner of a wheat stubble field. You know, if you're in western Kansas, western Nebraska, they have great hunts. You can kill a lot of doves over those kind of situations. So it doesn't take a lot. A guy just needs to get out. You can cruise around, drive some gravel roads this time of year, and you know, especially in the evening, find some place that there's a power line that's got 50 doves sitting on it. They got to be feeding around here somewhere and watering somewhere. And it's pretty easy to find some spots sometimes just doing that.
Yeah, and I think it's also just one of those things of, it's kind of like the kickoff, the precursor, I think, for a lot of people going into the fall. And there's a lot of tradition and heritage built around opening day of dove season. And I like that aspect of it. It's a very social gathering. A lot of people just bring all the buddies and cook out and have fun. And I like that aspect of dove hunting. I haven't been in years, but that's one of the biggest things that I remember of, it was all the cousins, uncles, everyone got together and you just picked your spot and shot a box and hopefully filled a limit. Most times not, though.
Yeah, it's just that start of fall, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody can feel it in the air. Even when it's 98 degrees and you're dove hunting, you still know, hey, it's fall's here, game on. And there's, next thing we know, it's a madcap rush for bow hunting and rifle hunting and bird hunting, you name it. It just all seems to pile on after that.
Speaking of which, are you able to divulge what some of your trip might look like for you and Frank this year? I know you guys typically try and go out west.
Yeah, so we've got an exciting hunt. We're going to try to, we've got a connection, the guy in Utah, a wild chucker hunting.
Oh.
So, yeah, we might not survive. This guy runs 10 miles up in the mountains. He said 3 days maximum was all Frank and I could handle. We would probably be hospitalized if he tried to hunt us any more than that. So,
because those hills are steep.
Flatlanders going to Utah. So looking forward to that. Yeah, and we usually have, he goes on a family Kansas hunt. I go on a family Kansas hunt as well. So
awesome.
We'll see. I don't know if COVID will affect. We've got another hunt that we sometimes do together in Kansas that I just looked up some regs the other day, and we may not be able to go participate in that one due to COVID at the moment.
Can we just have a COVID season?
It's just ridiculous.
There's going to be a lot of mad hunters this fall.
Yeah.
You know, it really messed up some spring schedules, but I'll be
it'll be okay for the turkeys, but right. Yeah. But when it comes to their deer hunts, ain't no way.
Yeah. Oh, and I'll bow hunt, of course, my own farm in southeast Kansas.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Awesome.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm ready for fall to get here.
Oh, I'm ready for the little bit cooler temperatures and some moisture.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
Awesome, Kyle. Well, thanks again. Hopefully you guys are listening. So many people are asking us about doves that it's just like we have to do these podcasts because so many people, it's a huge thing. If you're somewhere in Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and you're like, why are we talking about doves this week? It's because it's a very big deal in parts of the country.
It's worth the experience. So if you haven't done it, either find someone who can take you and do it, or make the trip.
Yep. Kyle, thanks again.
Yep. You bet. Enjoyed it.
We'll talk to you later.
Yep. Later.